Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
Hi, this is Dan Connolly, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
So thank you to Dan Connolly, one of our Kickstarter backers, who backed the Tennis Podcast at the end of 2018 so that we could produce the 120-plus shows that we're getting through this year.
He's lovely, Dan.
He is lovely,
Dan. He says nice things on Twitter.
Yes, he does. Catherine's here. Matt's here. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Hello. We've just had ATP Tour Finals action day two, and there's been lots of it, and records have been tumbling head-to-head. Reverses have been put to bed for Stefanos Tsitsipas and for Alexander Zverev, because they both came in 0-5 down against their respective opponents today, and they won them both. So yes, everything is on its head as we sit here in the media restaurant with our beer.
I suspect today hasn't been a good advert for the predictive powers of pole vault.
No, pole vault's had a bad day,
and us,
yeah,
on Twitter. Well, you say us, but I feel quite good about the way it's gone today versus how I thought it would go.
Yeah, I feel all right.
Oh, really?
About it. Yeah.
Okay. Did we say that on the podcast last night?
That's
which
irrelevant.
Which gives us license to editorialise after the fact.
In my head, everything went exactly as I thought. No, it didn't. No, I still thought Medvedev would end up winning against Tsitsipas, although I thought it could be closer than they've had in recent times. But, let's take them in order. First of all, we had Tsitsipas-Medvedev, which is... it's part of this saga, isn't it? This ongoing saga between those two, which started in Miami a couple of years ago and ended in pretty dramatic fashion with some pretty unpleasant words being exchanged at the net. It was fantastic on one level, I have to say. The match itself was a little surprising, because Medvedev just looked a little bit anemic out there, I thought. He didn't really do much today. And he got beaten in straight sets. They were close sets, but it was not that difficult for Tsitsipas.
Yeah, he was hitting a lovely, smooth, silky ball, wasn't he? And wasn't doing loads wrong, not lots of errors or anything, but wasn't making anything happen out there. And Tsitsipas had obviously come out with the very definite strategy of trying to make things happen. Must not be bored. Matt unearthed some absolutely glorious quotes from Tsitsipas ahead of their last meeting in Shanghai, which of course Medvedev won, because he'd won all of them before today, where he was asked, how do you feel about playing Medvedev? And he said, I just feel bored. I feel bored playing him. It's just, you know, to paraphrase David Law, the metronomic winning of titles.
And he said a wonderful thing. He said, not to be rude.
Not to be rude, but I hate you. And he said, yeah, I mean, he's got a big serve, and if he gets his serve in, then he's sort of screwed, aren't you? So, yeah. And then nonsensically, He was asked, so then he was asked, you know, what do you think you can do or have to do to try and get a win against him? He said, I'm sure I'll get one day. I'm sure I'll do better next time. I think I just have to win the first set.
Mm.
That was his conclusion. And despite that logic being just fatally flawed,
he was right
down to the fundamental understanding of tennis scoring, turned out he was completely right.
Yeah, because he came out, he won the first set. It was tiebreak, wasn't it? Yeah, tiebreak first set.
Yes, and it was a really flat first set.
Yes.
Really, really bizarre and flat and aggro-less and disappointing.
Well, I mean, apart from the bit where Tsitsipas clearly tried to drill Medvedev in the chest with three ground strokes, one of them was a forehand at point-blank range. How Medvedev didn't turn around and give him the eyeballs. No, I know, I was so disappointed.
Because he's been goaded into aggro and he didn't take the bait.
It's almost like he thinks, if I do it, I'm caricatured as doing it, aren't I? The old aggro. But then Tsitsipas did two of them in the same point. And actually, Medvedev fended them off and won the point with a lovely forehand volley, reaction volley. But he was strangely sort of lifeless out there, Medvedev. There was no get up and go in him. There was no defiance about him at all today. Even when things were going against him, even when I felt Tsitsipas was trying to tempt him into a bit of a nose to nose, you know, he wasn't having it. Yeah, he did. He wasn't there, and he admitted that afterwards, didn't he, Matt? In a press conference, Medvedev came in, and I was really quite surprised to hear this. He said, "I just haven't felt in form lately." I mean, he's obviously had all these incredible results over the summer. He won the back to back titles, were they St. Petersburg and
Shanghai?
And Shanghai, he won those titles. But he said, "In practice, I've not been playing well." He said that I had the time off in Moscow, I really needed that time off, but actually I was quite pleased the way I played today because I kind of wasn't awful.
Exactly. What he was saying was basically he didn't really want to take time off because he was in such a good rhythm, both in terms of winning matches and he was feeling good on the court, but he needed to take time off for his body because he was strapped up, wasn't he, all over the place. He was feeling it after a grueling summer. But what the break has done is he's lost a bit of form. He's definitely lost his edge
and rhythm player, isn't he? It's going to be a perpetual balancing act for him. I think.
I completely agree. We were saying all summer, Medvedev's fine as long as he can keep going. But it's the break that seems to have caused him a bit of a problem. Because he was determined that Tsitsipas wasn't really doing anything differently today to when they played in the past. He thought it was all about his own performance, Medvedev being a notch or two lower than he would have liked. But I don't know, I did see some different things from Tsitsipas. We were commenting on his slice that was a definite attempt to get a different ball to the boring one.
Well, apparently he had chatted to Jeremy Shardy, hadn't he? Who
Amazing.
Beat Medvedev in Paris, which is a little bit of a troll, isn't it?
Yes.
We're all ganging up on you,
Jeremy Shardy.
Yeah, we're having meetings.
How do you solve a problem like Daniil?
He's not the person I would immediately think of as one of the ATP's best strategists, Jeremy Shardy.
The press conference we then went, Matt and I attended Stefanos Tsitsipas's press conference afterwards. I mean, we should say as well, his on-court interview was delirious in its excitement.
He was genuinely in a dream state, wasn't he? He couldn't barely form sentences.
He was so chuffed.
he sort of slightly kind of ruined all the questions and yet made the interview so much better in the process because he was asked about a volley which he'd forgotten about.
And which he insisted
they put on the screen.
On having it played.
Was anyone
on the
else a little bit underwhelmed when the replay... I mean, it was decent.
Good regulation, punched volley.
Good volley.
In the circumstances, at 5-all in the first set tiebreak, it was good. But sort of an hour later on the replay, the moment had kind of gone. And then what else he was asked about? What else was he asked about in that interview? He just basically kind of, like I'm doing now, couldn't remember anything.
He said, I've always dreamed about this, and it's even better than my dreams.
Yeah, yes. Playing at the O2, he said he was misremembering when the tournament started. Oh, he said 2010.
And he really made a point of it. He said, if I am not mistaken.
Yeah, and he got it wrong.
17,000 people.
And then Nitto would have been really pleased with him, because he said, and it used to be Barclays.
Yeah. Yeah, like reeling off a list of past title sponsors.
Well, if
he looked so pleased with himself that he'd remembered that it used to be Barclays.
It was so good.
if you thought that was good, you should have seen it. I mean, I have not been to many Stefanos Tsitsipas press conferences. I don't think I've been to any, apart from the one when he lost at the Australian Open and he looked as if he wanted to go and live in a hole somewhere.
I think he might have gone and lived in a hole somewhere.
Yeah, briefly. Like in a cave. But in this press conference, he walked in and the first thing that happened was he admonished, I think, his dad, who was at the back of the room, for talking on the phone. Told him to shut up.
Started shouting at him.
Yeah. So he said, hold on a minute.
He had a phase in that, I don't think it was an isolated incident, but in the French Open match against Wawrinka, where he started shouting at his dad as well, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, but
he called him a
ghost. You're a ghost up there.
Yeah.
But his dad was genuinely interrupting the press conference, so Stefanos just sort of like moderated it at the start of before it got underway.
Have you seen the ATP video where he set secret tasks and fundamentally misunderstands the concept of anything being secret?
Yes. Yes, I tweeted about that.
Oh,
yes.
Right.
He's told to take secret selfies with Nadal and Federer, and he goes up to them, hey guys, can I have a selfie?
Anyway, in the press conference, he is disarmingly honest and straightforward, and there's no spin in his head. He doesn't think, oh, they're trying to get me on this, so I better be careful.
So earnest.
So you've got Neil McLemmon of the Mirror, who just asks the question that we all want to ask, and exactly in the way we all want to ask it, which is, why don't you like Daniil Medvedev? And Tsitsipas goes, well, it's a big word. These are big words. I think he even said hate. I don't hate him. But, you know, we clearly have a problem. and then
do you remember when Nick Kyrgios briefly acted as peacemaker?
Yeah, that was a weird time.
In the summer, and they all took a flight, a private jet together, and it felt briefly harmonious.
Yeah, those days are over.
But the Nick Kyrgios glue has disintegrated.
Yeah, he's not here. He needs to qualify if that's going to happen again. But Tsitsipas was then asked, well, what he says, what do you mean? And Neil said, well, you know, you had your incident in Miami after the match, you've had a few fallings out. And Tsitsipas said, yes, I'm quite glad you asked me about Miami, I'd like to talk about that. And he ran us through in just the minutest detail exactly what had happened on the court,
what the score was, when there was a let, all the detail.
It was, and Medvedev had thought he should have apologised for a let mid rally, like a net cord that Tsitsipas ended up winning, and he came up to the net and he said are you going to apologise for that?
And Tsitsipas had forgotten that there was a net cord in the rally, so he was like, well, why am I what is there to apologise for? It was only when he watched it back that he realised that there was a net cord in the middle of the rally, and that's what Medvedev wanted him to apologise for.
He said it fazed him and he didn't win another game or match, and so he was really angry, and that's when he said, I said what I said to him and I do regret those words that I used. And what did he call him?
Bullshit Russian.
Called him a bullshit Russian. And which, not surprisingly,
Russian parentage
didn't go down very well with Daniil Medvedev, who then offered him out for a fight, and at the net, using the F word and everything. And Tsitsipas declined and walked off. And thereafter, it has gone not very much uphill. It's been a frosty relationship, apart from the private jet sharing.
And that was why today's match was a bit weird, because if you were just watching that tennis match as a casual tennis fan, you would have had no sense at all, really, that they didn't get on. Okay, there was the little shot at him, but that's not totally out of the, out of the norm. We do see that.
The handshake was a glorious throwback to the frostiness of Connors and McEnroe, though.
It was frosty from Medvedev's side, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose it's more lost. Inclined to be frosty.
I mean, it wasn't unpleasant. It was just, no, I'm not going to make a song and dance about this, you know.
Just, but I'm also not going to touch you for any longer than is strictly necessary.
Absolutely right. And then there was another one where I actually had a chance to ask the last question, and I asked a question that I didn't expect a straight answer for a minute, which was, which of the big three is the most difficult to play, in your personal opinion? And he goes, oh, Nadal. he says, I think everybody thinks that. and he went, and I said, why? He went through in detail that just his competitiveness is just, it's almost like he's explaining what we would assume from the outside, that the sheer force of nature that is Nadal bringing it all the time is just a bit too
much. This is a bleak question before it's even come out of my mouth, but what sort of horrendous life experience would it take to make Stefanos Tsitsipas jaded?
Well, he had it.
Losing to Wawrinka,
would
the French Open.
Undergo? But jaded in terms of sort of cynical and...
Oh, OK.
Do you know, I think that there was some of that, though, when he was burnt out in that period. When he said, I keep doing the same things in training and it feels like I'm doing this for no reason. And then he stopped using any social media, didn't he? And all this other stuff. I think when
stop
he was...
quoting Shawn Mendes on a daily basis and then deleting and retweeting Shawn Mendes.
And
quotes.
Then deciding, actually, I am going to say it, even though I know I shouldn't. I feel like it's the biggest and the one question I didn't have a chance to ask, which was, what are you going to do differently next year? Because clearly he needs to schedule his year differently. Mm. I hope he does for his sake, because he will have another period like that otherwise.
Well, he played a lot of 250s this year, didn't he? Which probably just kind of need to go from his schedule and then he'll be fine. But I feel like he kind of thinks that he owes those tournaments in a way. I remember when he won Marseille, one at the start of this year or towards the start of this year, and he was really saying, you know, this tournament gave me a wild card, I'm so happy to win, I feel like I owe this tournament something in my career. But you've got to be bold enough, strong enough to drop that from your schedule, because he can't be playing 26 28 events. I was looking actually, in Djokovic, Nadal and Federer, I know they're older, but they qualified here with the most points and by far the fewest events. I mean, half the number of events that the others are playing. And it's just smart scheduling.
See, I feel like Alexander Zverev carries himself too much like one of the greats of the game when he hasn't actually done anything yet of note. And I think Stefanos Tsitsipas and several others carry themselves far too much the opposite of that and don't think about the big picture. And I give Tsitsipas a pass, because it's the first time he's had any of this, but he's got to learn from it. Same way his team has taken way too long to understand.
Well, we don't know if he has understood, do we?
Well,
he's committed to play Kitzbühel next year.
Okay, I mean, look, he can have Kitzbühel.
Can he? He's missing the Olympics for it.
Yeah, I find that bizarre.
Yeah, that is a bit bizarre.
That's the one that I find most jarring.
Right, we need to ask him about that.
Yeah,
we need to ask him about that in the press conference. Had we not needed to record the podcast, I was going to ask Zverev about that logo of his, but anyway,
I don't think we've mentioned that on the pod. I think that's all been outside the pod.
Yeah, he's got a big S.
There are rumours that Zverev has his own custom logo, and I'm not going to pass comment on that until we've had it confirmed.
Yes, I'm going to ask him. But I'm not sure. I think it might be something to do with the clothing sponsor, because Tsitsipas has got something on his kit as well.
Yes, which I really squinted at for a long time before I understood. But it says Believer, but spread over two lines.
Yeah.
So it looks like two words, neither of which are words, like what Bell was it? And Eva.
What was it Tsitsipas signed on the camera today?
Keep fighting, keep loving.
Oh,
bless him.
He's that 15-year-old at school that writes his own poetry and thinks it's going to change the world.
might. Isn't he lovely?
Oh, it's
I think
it's wonderful.
He's
it's
great.
It's just the most adorable naivety. about him that I don't ever want to see change.
No.
And is this tournament already a success for Tsitsipas, no matter what happens now, given that he's beaten Medvedev?
Yeah, I mean, today was literally better than all of his dreams, Matt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, can you imagine experiencing something that's better than all of your dreams?
No.
I would consider that a success.
And yeah. I mean, he said this was one of the most important matches, wins of my career. And when another player would say that, I'd kind of think, yeah, right. But when he says it, I kind of believe it.
Because he's processing.
He's probably ranked them all. He's probably got them all written down in a diary, hasn't he?
Can you imagine his diary?
Oh, I mean, Steph's, if they ever that ever comes out, he's definitely got a diary, hasn't he?
He does, yeah.
He definitely writes his thoughts down every night. Because, I mean, I know I used to when I was a bit younger than him. And he's a quite young chap mentally.
Do you think he writes it in the form of sort of... Do you think he writes it in iambic pentameter?
He has got cool handwriting. I've seen... He's posted something before of his handwriting, and it's, like, kind of vintage handwriting. It's all wafty and...
Isn't he great?
Of course
rounded.
It's wafty.
Yeah.
Is it written with a quill?
Yes, it looks like it is.
Fantastic.
But also, I liked what he said in the press conference about how he realises that in the same way that he's learned from previous losses to Medvedev, Medvedev will have learned from this loss. And he knows that just because he's cracked the code once doesn't mean that he's completely sussed it out.
Jeremy Shardy's unlikely to have further intel for him in the future, I'd say.
He did say that after the loss in Shanghai, Tsitsipas, he said, I spoke to my brother and I said, I it's going to change next time. And he clearly was really pleased to be able to say that.
Mm. But I thought that was good perspective to have, given that, you know, on the court, that the celebration he gave was so exuberant.
Yeah.
And it felt like it was, you know, that was it. That was the moment. Almost in that moment, it was like he's cracked Medvedev, but he realises that this was one match and he still does have a 1-5 record against him.
Medvedev walked off the court doing sarcastic gestures towards his box. Did you see that?
Yeah, and he was doing that throughout the match, and I don't really know what in relation to, but...
Just a final point on that. I think it's really, really important for that rivalry that it's not gone 6-0.
Yeah.
Because we all want that rivalry to thrive and grow and
back
be
and
a
forth.
Beautiful, grotesque thing over the next decade.
As we want this
and,
very
you know,
Tsitsipas
as soon
to
as
be.
It gets to 6-0, 7-0, it, you know.
Zverev Tsitsipas next
snowball.
Is coming in a couple of days' time, so look forward to that. And that's because Zverev.
There's aggro there as well.
Yeah, there is. Zverev beat Nadal today 6-2, 6-4. My assessment is that Zverev was awesome tonight, and he was. I mean, there's something wrong with the speed gun because he hit successive serves of 144 and 147 miles an hour. One of them was a slice serve out wide. So I'm sorry,
but I don't get why it's not showing erroneous results for other players.
Yeah,
that's the
Federer's
one thing that I'm confused
was significantly
by.
Down last night, apparently.
This, I mean,
significantly 5 miles per hour.
This did happen with Zverev last year, I remember, and he just seems to roll his arm over and get these incredibly fast serves. Yet, he clearly was hitting them very, very well, and he was blasting everything behind them as well. But Nadal was completely off, wasn't he? Don't think there is anything wrong with the abdominal.
No, he said in his press conference that he felt no pain. He's very positive about the whole situation with the abdominal. The reason for his poor performance was lack of practice. He didn't feel match ready due to having to take a week, 10 days off.
Which is mind-boggling, isn't it? He played his last match 10 days ago. It was Friday in Paris. Okay, Paris plays a little bit differently, but it's an indoor hard court. It was 10 days ago. That was a quarterfinal, so that was his third match of the week. And yet it's not ludicrous because we know he is a, like we were discussing with Medvedev earlier, a form and a rhythm player. So for him taking 5 days off from, I think more significantly from practicing, is a massive, massive thing. And he looked so
rusty
out there.
So rusty.
Yeah.
He'd got no timing, he'd got And he ended up resorting to going 20 feet behind the baseline, doing the lasso-like forehand cross-court just to try to get rhythm, it seemed to me. We had on Five Live Sports, actually, we had Dan Evans with us commentating for the first time, and it was interesting watching it through his eyes. And he said he clearly just isn't feeling the ball on the strings correctly here for him, and he was shocked at how many balls were landing short. But then Zverev was just teeing off. He clearly decided to go for it right from the first ball, which was refreshing, really. It was a little bit Andy Murray-esque from way back when he used to decide, my normal game isn't going to do it against this guy, I better just blast.
It's like the last 12 months didn't happen.
Yes.
Yeah. It was like the muscle memory of being on that court took over. Which, I mean, look, the court obviously suits him absolutely perfectly. It's best of three sets. There are caveats, but it goes to show how much of his woes have been mental and confidence related, which is obviously a vicious circle type of a problem. But it was... Yeah, it was genuinely like the last year of his life hasn't happened, which must be, given his accounts of the last year of his life, just a glorious feeling for him.
Yeah, rather ironic, really, given that he's declared so many courts his effing court, apart from this one. And this might actually be the one that is his court, because that's three wins in a row now, beating Federer in the semis last year, Djokovic in the final, Nadal... Here he's done the big three triple in consecutive matches, and you watch Zverev play like that, and suddenly you can picture his future being really bright. Because how do you beat him when he's serving like that and hitting like that off the ground? He's the sort of nightmare tennis player that I think you could imagine, with a big serve and big ground strokes. We've not really seen that. All the big servers, the giants have always had weaknesses with their ground strokes, but Zverev like that, his forehand today was about 10 times better than Nadal's, and that just feels a weird sentence to say, given a lot of people would probably call Nadal's forehand the best ever, and Zverev's is normally his weakness, but he was hitting it so well.
Yeah, well, I think I until tonight, I thought even peak Zverev, the forehand was his weakness. Even at his best, I still thought the forehand was susceptible and a little bit funky and can look a bit awkward, but yeah, tonight it was just magnificent.
But he didn't rally with it, really, did he? He didn't bother rallying with it. If it was there, he slapped it for a... He was going for winners on the forehand, and he was trying to hit it as hard as he possibly could, really. And I just think that simplifies matters for him, and it's why I don't understand why he plays so cautiously and... patiently from the baseline. It's passive tennis, and it's not him. He's 6'6", for goodness sake. And as you say, it's when he's playing like he did tonight, it's like watching Novak Djokovic with Milos Raonic's serve, and that is a frightening prospect. So why doesn't he look like that when he goes to the Australian Open?
Oh, I'm having flashbacks to the... You've mentioned Raonic, the Raonic match at the Australian Open.
I mean, he was so... pale and insignificant that day. He just
six love, wasn't it?
Dialed a performance in. He looked like I described actually Nadal. It was like he looked like some imposter was out there in his place. And Zverev at slams basically looks like that. Gets involved in epics that he shouldn't be in.
Well, it kind of goes to that muscle memory point. He's built up so much baggage at these slams that every time he goes into a slam, it's a talking point. It's an event. Can Zverev, A, get through the first few rounds without playing unnecessary sets? Normally the answer's no. And B, once he gets to a quarterfinal, which he has done a few times now, will he actually step up and play the way he can? No. And you just expect it. And if we're expecting it, it must be in his head as well.
Yeah. Well, he's the only member of the field here this year that hasn't reached a slam semi-final this year.
And how do you turn that around? Because the shot clock here, the speed gun rather, here, because it shows these 140s, I think everybody in the stadium it becomes a factor. Even just the image in his own mind of, I'm a big server, look how hard I'm hitting it. You people are nothing to me. I can knock you all off the court. So that is our... impression of Alexander Zverev. He looks bigger, he looks stronger, he looks more dangerous. Then you get him out at the Grand Slams, and what do you think? You think, oh yeah, he's going to get embroiled in some epic in the second round against Jeremy Chardy or someone. And, you know...
And then Jeremy Chardy will be giving... his next opponent tips.
Yeah, and he'll edge his way through it, and then he'll find a way against Joao Sousa, and then in round four he'll run into Diego Schwartzman, who'll knock him out, and that's what happens to Alexander Zverev, and that's the image we have going into slams of him, and he needs to find a way to rewire that, not only in his mind, but in all the opponents and all of the people like us in the crowds.
And the fact is, and this is a brutal truth, I'm sorry to say, regardless of how brilliant he might end up being throughout the whole of this week. He was brilliant tonight. I hope he can keep it up, because it was a joy to watch, frankly. He could win every match, love and love, to win this title from now on, and it's not going to affect everything you've just described, because he's done this before.
Mm.
He's done this before and had a, frankly, thoroughly disappointing year. Yes, there are factors, but I do think we've heard more about those factors. I think other players have had factors and we've heard less about them. I think they're being given extra weight.
Five exhibitions in a week with Roger Federer. Help or hindrance?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
I mean,
we don't know.
Well,
we don't know.
We don't know.
It's however,
impossible.
What do you think?
I do think that spending time doing what he wants to do, if that is what he wants to do and that's his decision, I think that probably is a good thing. You know, we've spoken all year about him having to do stuff he doesn't want to do. Okay, perhaps he's made more of it. But if this is completely his decision and it's going to make him happy, then it could be a good thing. But I don't see how it's necessarily better than playing Davis Cup or resting. That's my problem with it. His whole argument has been, I need an off-season. I need an off-season to train, to work on my game and to rest. And he's eating into that time.
I also still have reservations about spending significant periods of time around Roger Federer. You're not Roger Federer, mate. You haven't won 20 slams. He can do that. He can do whatever the hell he likes. It's fine, as far as I'm concerned, for Roger Federer not to be playing the Davis Cup Finals. all the rest of it. Although it'd be great if he did, and all the rest of it, it'd be great to have one team event that really worked for everybody, all that sort of thing. But Federer has earned the right. Zverev hanging out with him and being his sparring partner for a week of exhibitions.
He's being Moritz's team for the week, isn't he? Yeah,
following him around.
I don't know that helps really, because I think he needs to pull his head in and just get on with winning big titles. You can do the other stuff later. We'll see. Maybe it'll help him. Maybe being around Roger Federer will rub off or something.
Well, he is one and a small sample size, but 1-0 against Federer and 1-0 against Nadal since the not one negative face Laver Cup pep talk.
Yep.
I'm going to give you a stat now, Matt.
Hit me.
I've already got. Did you moved on very quickly before I could reference the fact that Matt gave me an impressed face earlier when I produced a stat.
Oh right, go on.
I got a little nod.
Have you? Which one was this?
Got another one.
Have your moment. Which stat did you come up with that got the nod?
I've already forgotten it.
Same.
Oh, the only one not to have reached a semi-final.
Oh yes,
Grand Slam
semi, yes,
this year.
That was great.
This one's better. Okay, since in the last decade. So since the start of the 2010 season, Rafael Nadal has played 516 tennis matches. There are only six where he hasn't created a break point, and one of them is tonight.
Wow.
And three of them were in Shanghai and three of them were here.
Crikey, that is quite a good stat.
That is very, 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 very good.
That's very detailed. Okay, right then. So we've had those two matches today, and in the doubles today we've had Pierre, Hugues Herbert, and Nicolas Mahou, who were playing in the most lovely outfits, beating Cabal. They were playing in navy blue and red, weren't they?
Yep.
They played against
French.
Cabal and Farah.
Well, I really confidently say Farah.
Right.
And then Tim Henman goes in and say, who are you going for, Tim? Herbert and Mahou or Cabal and Farah? Cabal and Farah. Thanks, Tim. Off you go to the commentary box.
I watched
6-3, 7-5 for Herbert and Mahou.
They were really good. I watched quite a lot of that. I made that a bit of a priority today to watch that.
And it really felt like a step up quality wise in terms of the doubles that I've seen so far. And I think there are factors at play there. I think there have been a few teams that have been pretty nervous. I think Ram and Salisbury yesterday were really nervous, understandably, but they looked a class apart to me today. Mm.
They just complement each other perfectly when they play. They're both game style and personality wise. And honestly, I think when they do play their best, I think they're the best doubles team in the world, both to watch and in terms of results.
Let's revel in it.
Yeah, and as you said on Prime, they've realised that they're better together.
Oh. There's a message in there somewhere, isn't there?
And Herbert is, Herbert is desperate to make it up to Mo.
Yeah,
you can see it all over his face.
Should be.
Yeah. But he really is. He really feels bad.
Good.
Yeah, because
he's the loveliest bloke.
Mahou was asked on the court tonight, or was it tonight? Yeah, it was tonight, about the fact they were playing the Wimbledon champions.
Oh, that was awkward, wasn't it?
It was a bit awkward. He said, yeah, I know they're the Wimbledon champions. I was there. And you could see, because of course Mahou lost to Cabal and Farah in that final alongside Edouard Roger Vasselin, and you could see Herbert wince in the background at the memory of everything that had transpired to lead to that point. It was
orcs.
But it wasn't quite awkward. They clearly worked it through. It didn't feel like, oh, this is the elephant in the room that we never talk about. It felt more like they'd sort of
stayed up all night
for weeks on end, working through their differences and reaching a better place.
And Nicolas Mahou keeps on telling Herbert, it's okay, you don't have to apologise anymore. But, it's all right.
Yeah, but he'll never stop apologising.
No.
Kravets and Mies beat Roger and Takao 7-6, 4-6, 10-6. There's your other result of the day.
Yeah, debutants, Kravets and Mies.
Yep.
Against former champions, Roger Ntikau, 2015.
The only former champions in the doubles field.
And okay. Is that anything else?
I have a stat.
Oh, go on.
18 now of the last 19 singles matches at this tournament have been straight sets.
That is extraordinary, isn't it?
Why does that keep happening, do we think? I mean, I guess when you fall behind against a top player in the world, these players all have really good records, don't they, from one set up. But equally, they've probably got the best records from one set down, so that doesn't really work.
For the most part, I think it's the mental fatigue. Mm. That once you go behind, you just don't have it within you to mount the fight back you might be able to mount earlier in the season. But then two of those blokes that have lost in straight sets are Federer and Nadal. Mm. So of all the people that I'm expecting to... I mean, all the way through, Dan Evans just kept going, this isn't over, this isn't over. And you could see the stress in him, and he was fidgeting, and he kept holding two fingers up as if to say, this is double coming up here from Zverev, because, you know, you've seen it that many times. But Nadal could not find the shots, could he? He would sort of do all the things that Rafael Nadal does, that he sees himself do on the TV and replay when he's winning Grand Slam titles, and he was doing all those things, but when he actually came to make contact with the ball, it wasn't really going anywhere.
Yeah, there were more shanks than I've ever seen Nadal hit. Yeah. I think he's not a shanker in the way that Federer
shanker,
is.
So
alarming stat, that the one that wasn't two sets was Cilic Isner.
That epic.
Which was
front of mind for me.
Distinctly remember being a bit annoyed that it went to three sets last year.
Doesn't deserve Jeez, three
isn't
sets.
It?
Okay.
Wow.
So tomorrow...
It wasn't a vintage year, was it?
Tuesday, we have doubles Rajiv Ram and Joe Salisbury against Ivan Dodig and Filip Polasek. And then Roger Federer against Matteo Berrettini is the afternoon match at 2 o'clock. It's Lukasz Kubot against Marcelo Melo against Raven Klassen and Michael Venus. And then Novak Djokovic against Dominic Thiem in the night session. Singles predictions? Federer's going to win, isn't he?
Federer's going to beat Berrettini,
Yeah, agreed. And Djokovic, I think, will win. I mean, going out on a limb and predicting Djokovic and Federer.
I think Thiem's going to have a set, but he's going to lose in three. There you go. There's your three-setter. What do you think?
No, I think it might be two.
Catherine's got that I might just go for team look about her.
If the next word out of your mouth isn't team, I'm going to be disappointed now.
Well, obviously, really, I think Djokovic is going to win.
But wouldn't it be good for the tournament and the excitement?
Yeah, I want Djokovic Federer to be as good as it can possibly be on Thursday. And I think that means Djokovic losing to team. I'm okay to take the hit on team Berrettini if it raises the stakes for Djokovic Federer.
Okay.
Do we think Nadal losing will just focus Djokovic even more? It's now in his hands. He can... He wins all his matches, then he'll be well.
I mean,
one.
I don't think... I think it was close to impossible for him to be more focused, but if it were possible, he probably is, yeah.
Okay. We look forward to it. Catherine, Matt, thank you. Here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by TennisBalls.com, with our mascot, Rio, with a Y. If you know anybody who you've ever met in your life who likes tennis... tell them about the Tennis Podcast. That sounds like a splendid idea.
Then we'll get a threat. That's what it sounds like.
Lots more listeners that way. Leave us an iTunes review and come back tomorrow where we'll have another one of these for you.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.